Now, the Buckeye Extra Podcast with Rob Aller, Bill Rabinowitz, and Joey Kaufman from the Columbus Dispatch.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is brought to you by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
Hello, Buckeye fans. This is Joey Kaufman from the Dispatch. I'm joined by Bill Rabinowitz, Rob Aller. We're recording this on Monday, April 19th, and we're 2 days out from the Ohio State football spring game, which is what we're going to discuss over the next little bit. You got a little sneak peek at what this team might look like next fall. And I guess most of all, we got a look at the three quarterbacks who could be starting for Ohio State come Labor Day weekend at Minnesota. C.J. Stroud, Jack Miller, and Kyle McCord. We're all out there throwing for Team Brutus or Team Buckeye. Bill, what did you make of the early showings from what we saw from those three guys?
Well, I had my money on Team Brutus. And then when I found out the quarterbacks were going to play for all three of them, it really messed me up. Yeah, I thought all of them looked good. I thought if I were going to probably rank them, I would say Stroud, then McCord, then Miller. Miller threw the one interception, which I'm sure will not please Ryan Day. That was at the end of the first drive. I thought Stroud looked to be in command. I thought McCord looked to be in command. They each threw two touchdown passes. They looked the part. I mean, all of them did. I mean, Jack Miller had his moments. I thought he checked out a little bit too quickly. But you know, I still think it's a three-way competition. I think this is the beginning, not the end. I think people who think that Stroud is the front runner, I think that's true. I think he is the front runner, but I don't think it's a settled deal by any means. And it's not in Ryan Day's interest to settle this anytime soon. It's certainly in his interest to keep this competition alive as long as possible until they have to make a decision and go into the Minnesota game with the number one guy.
Joey and I were talking about that, I think, pre-game or pre-scrimmage, pre-practice, whatever you want to call the spring, quote, air quote, game. It's in Day's interest to also string this along because of the whole transfer deal. Not that any of these guys are given to transfer this soon, but I believe May 1st, Joey might know better than I, May 1st or sometime in May is the deadline for to put your name in the transfer portal to be immediately eligible. So, you know, that's right around the corner. If you name Stroud or whoever the starter right after the spring game, well, you know, number two and number three quarterback may be looking to transfer immediately. So this way they don't really know for sure. But I'm not sure that's why you exactly do it, but it's a nice side benefit. And along those lines, I'm with you. Stroud, I thought, looked the best. I think Miller probably after throwing the pick got a little defensive, probably shook him a little bit and affected things. Now, I guess that's a takeaway too. You know, you throw a pick and you go right back, you know, instead of going right back out there, you kind of check down and you play it a little safer potentially. So that would be my take. I thought all three guys had strong enough arms. You know, I got some blowback on this. I actually thought Stroud and Miller had a little more zip on their sideline passes than McCord, but I don't know. Did I have that right, McCord? I keep wanting to call him McCall.
McCord.
I guess you're thinking about DeMario McCall and his move to the
– Probably.
It's easy to confuse the two.
Yeah.
Kyle McCord. Exactly.
I do think all three of those guys, Jack Miller, C.J. Stroud, Kyle McCord, are all talented. I mean, they all show it. They all have arm talent. And I think this quarterback room is really a lot different than 2019, where you had Justin Fields. Then for half that offseason, you had Matthew Baldwin. The other half, you had Gunnar Hoke, and you had Chris Chuganoff. This quarterback competition is really far different from that, where you felt like there was one guy in Justin Fields who had significantly more talent than the two guys he was going against. And I think when you watch the three guys they have now, either in practice or the spring game, you don't really have questions about their talent. They throw the ball and routes on air, and they're just playing pitch and catch with the receivers. They looked the part. And for the most part, Saturday, I thought they all looked the part. I mean, I think all of us would side with the fact that, yeah, C.J. Stroud probably is a little bit of a front runner, but it's not a huge gap, I don't think. And I think all three guys can show some bright spots, and they did.
I think what's interesting is that I think that what's going to decide this is probably going to be stuff we don't see on the field, honestly. I think it's going to be how they conduct themselves in the meeting room, how they establish themselves as leaders, how responsible they are, how much they kind of accept the mantle of being the Ohio State quarterback and that responsibility, how the other teammates respond to them. All of them, as Joey said, all of them can make the throws. I mean, they all have the arms. I mean, this is not Justin Fields compared to Gunnar Hoke or Chris Chuganoff. I mean, this is just not. And by the same token, people are kind of saying, well, Stroud's the front runner because he was the number two guy at the end of last year. Well, you know, and comparing it to, let's say, Dwayne Haskins a few years ago, it's completely different. Dwayne Haskins had led Ohio State over Michigan in Ann Arbor from behind and had a, you know, that's a pretty big statement. That's a pretty big chip to have in your favor. All C.J. Stroud did was come in for one play, filling in for an injured Justin Fields and hand the ball off. You know, people read the tea leaves and say, okay, he's the number two guy. He went ahead of Jack Miller. Well, okay, for that particular game he did. We don't know. There are a lot of people, you know, I'm not afraid to say I don't know, because I think anyone who says they know for a fact is projecting. Because do I think C.J. Stroud is the favorite? Yeah, he's. I would give him probably better than a 50% chance of being the starter. But, again, I think this is going to be decided over the long haul. I think it's going to be decided by things that we don't see. The public doesn't see. The reporters don't see. It's going to be decided by how they are in the room, how they process the playbook, all the things that I mentioned. And I wouldn't discount any of the three. I mean, I know Kyle McCord, just because I did the story when Joey and I did the stories on the three quarterbacks. I did Kyle McCord, and I know from talking to people who know him well, he's a really dedicated guy. He's just going to be very responsible, mature. I'm not saying the other guys aren't, but I, you know, that's what I can say about Kyle McCord. And so I think this is going to be something that's going to go into probably August before we know.
Yeah. I mean, we'll never know behind the scenes, and I'm always hesitant to say one guy is X off the field and one isn't. I mean, we've had the most stand-up guys of all time get into trouble here. Quarterbacks. Sure. So, you know, I like Stroud. I think Joey put this in his observations, follow-up observations. I just thought he ran the offense, just clicked a little more under him. You know, this is just the eyeball test of a guy seemingly the team kind of working best under him. Yeah, we saw it in a very limited, you know, scrimmage. But if nothing changes, I think Stroud's a starter. We can agree on that.
Stroud, I think, Robbie, you might feel this way, the same as well. But the offense clicked, and he just looks smooth. I'm trying to figure out the best way to describe it. But he just seemed like they were on schedule. C.J. Stroud gets rid of the ball quickly, which I like his throwing release a lot. It has some zip to it. And he doesn't waste a lot of time in throwing it. When you watch Jack Miller a little bit, and granted, we haven't really seen him a ton up close other than a few practice periods earlier this month in the spring game, but it looks like he has a little more of an elongated release if we're to really nitpick all the passers. But McCord and Stroud, to me, have the cleanest and smoothest releases out of those two guys, or out of those three guys.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I thought that there was almost I think I wrote that Miller had a bit of a hitch, maybe a little unfair, but he definitely has a slower release. And who knows why his passes got knocked down at the line. I think he had at least two knocked down at the line. I don't know. I mean, is that because he's got a little slower release? I mean, we have crumbs to go off here. But the crumbs we do have, that's what we saw.
either way, we have to make bread with our crumbs, and we also have to make some bread with this quick ad break. We'll be back here in a second. You have to stand behind a statement like the best buying experience in the business. At Rosati Windows, their commitment to the customer has not changed since day one. Mike Rosati realizes that people have options when choosing replacement windows, which is why he appreciates each and every one of their customers. At Rosati Windows, they pride themselves on the very high standards of business ethics and customer satisfaction. They are accredited with an A+ rating with the Better Business Bureau, a top business with customer choice, and voted by Central Ohio as the best business in the window community with the Columbus Dispatch. That list goes on and on, but it's important to point out their customers voted for Rosati Windows for these awards, and it's why they make a statement like, Rosati Windows is the best buying experience in the business. We're back. Thanks for tuning in to the Buckeye Extra football podcast. Bill, Rob, the other element in this quarterback competition, I think, is also just when you look at the three options that Ryan Day is going to have, and eventually we'll get into some non-quarterback stuff on this podcast because I think there are some other revealing parts about this team in the spring game. But as impressive as Kyle McCord was, the interesting thing, if they pick him as the guy, you get him as a three-year starter. And that's more time than Ryan Day has been accustomed to working with guys in college, because if you look at his career path at Ohio State, he's worked with JT Barrett for 1 year in 2017, 1 year with Dwayne Haskins in 2018, and gets Dwayne Haskins to a point where he's so good he goes pro after 1 year. Maybe you thought you'd work with him longer. Then you get a year and a half of Justin Fields. And with all these guys, the benefit that Ryan Day has is he at least gets 2 years with C.J. Stroud and Jack Miller, but you know you're getting 3 years with Kyle McCord. The flip side, Bill, we were talking about this a little bit this morning before the podcast, pick Kyle McCord, you upset a lot of people in your quarterback room because he's younger than two guys and he's only a year ahead of Quinn Ewers, who comes in 22.
Yeah, here's the flip side of that, as you started to say. Let's say you pick Kyle McCord, and he should, if he's the best guy, you should pick him. But here's the consequence of that. You figure that C.J. Stroud and Jack Miller are gone, because why would they stay behind the guy who's younger than them and is clearly going to be the starter? And then you have to deal with the issue of Quinn Ewers, who is the number one overall prospect next year. And I think Quinn Ewers accepts the fact that as a freshman, he probably, you know, has to understand that it's unlikely he'll start as a true freshman, but he'd have 1 year and then would follow, say, C.J. Stroud or Jack Miller, who would be completing their third year. And you figure in that scenario that Kyle McCord might transfer. Well, if Kyle McCord's your starter, Quinn Ewers now becomes questionable as to whether he comes, or at least more questionable. Now, his number one other option, Texas, they've signed or got a commitment from a five-star guy. He could start another round of quarterback musical chairs. So it'll be interesting to see how it factors in. The other part of that is Ryan Day can attract the best quarterbacks in the country. So Ryan Day can say, okay, I'll take my chance with Kyle McCord. I believe in him. I think he's the best guy. And if I lose the others, then I lose the others. And I'll be able to tell any recruit in the future, look, if you're the best guy, I will play you regardless, because I've shown it with Kyle McCord. These are all factors that are going to have to be weighed. I mean, if it's truly, let's say, a tie between C.J. Stroud and Kyle McCord, the easy thing for Ryan Day to do, and maybe the prudent thing for him to do, is say, okay, C.J., you're the guy. I think Kyle McCord would stay for the year. C.J. obviously would. You'd probably lose Jack Miller. And I think Quinn Ewers would stick with his commitment, because the assumption is that C.J. Stroud would play this year and next year, and then Quinn Ewers would compete for the starting job. It's with the transfer portal now, nothing is simple, and everything has chain reactions. And it's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out, because it's not just about who's the quarterback for 2021. It's who's going to be in 2022, 2023, and maybe beyond. So it's a monumental decision that Ryan Day is going to face.
I was going to say that truth serum. We like to talk about truth serum. Joey might be onto something. If you gave Ryan Day truth serum, he might he might go with that scenario so that he could have a guy for 3 years. But as Bill said, he can't do that, really. There's just too much fallout. I mean, you were talking a razor-thin edge of risk there in terms of losing guys and what's that message send to other recruits. Plus, I think it'd be a different story if he came out right now and it was clear that McCord was better. Then you could do it. But I just, him not being so much better than the other two guys, I just don't think you can do it if you're Ryan Day. You just, you can't. And the guy's a true freshman. So he may look better now, but you don't know until there's 100,000 or whatever in that stadium. You just don't know how he's going to perform. And if he falls apart and the other two guys are transferred, you're in some big hurt then.
Yeah, and I'm not saying he should be the guy or is better than the other two. I'm not saying that at all. I think it's a very close competition. I think if you do pick McCord, you kind of know you're going to be working without a safety net for a while. And that's the risk. But if he's the best guy, he owes it to the team to play the best guy. So it's, you know, there's this pros and cons thing with all these guys. Look, the simplest thing to do would be to have C.J. Stroud or even Jack Miller win the job. That would be the simplest thing. But I'm not sure that there's going to be the separation between the three of them. That even going into the Minnesota game, or even after the Minnesota game, you're going to say, this guy's going to be the quarterback all year. We'll see. You know, he could name a quarterback, and the Minnesota game doesn't go well. Either they lose or the quarterback doesn't play well, and then you reevaluate. Because it's not like Justin Fields chugging off and hoax situation. I mean, you do have two viable alternatives if the starter does struggle. So this is going to go on for a while, and it's going to be, you know, look, talk radio and all those, that's great for this kind of stuff, right? Podcasts, it's great for this.
Yeah, and I think we've hit on this well, but picking McCord really does have the most, I guess, political consequences in terms of the ripple effect it could have. And if three guys are equal, you almost want to just protect your depth and kind of cycle your way through. If give Stroud the first shot, and if it goes well, you have your guy for 2 years at least, which is still better than 1 year or a year and a half as you had with Justin Fields. And if for whatever reason Stroud struggles in September, well, you can replace him with Miller or McCord in October. It's not written in stone once you pick a guy for the Minnesota game that you have to stick with him the whole year. But I think depth is going to be important for them, because if you have three guys you like and you don't want to entirely run off the quarterback room.
This is why college coaching is not what it was even a couple of years ago. It's not as enticing. It's not as great of a job as it was. Talk to coaches off the record and they will say, oh my gosh, this thing's becoming a major headache. Urban Meyer has said, you know, coaching today, I just don't know, man, college coaching. That's why you jump to the pros. You're just going to see this because of the transfer portal, immediate eligibility. It is a game changer. It is a sea change and is making their jobs that much tougher, but it's hard to feel sorry for coaches. I wrote this the other day, who can jump from job to job to job and have immediate eligibility, and yet the players can't. They had to sit. So now they're on an equal playing field and have at it.
And what's interesting about Ohio State's culture is that it's kind of, you know, you get these 4- and 5-star guys, and the first thing you do when they get here in January or June, what's the word? De-recruitment. You go from we need you, we love you, to we love you, but you are nothing. And you're going to start, and we're going to push you hard, and you're going to hate it. You talk to players who've been through 4 years here, and the story is pretty consistent. The first year they get here, they're all happy, you know, at Ohio State, and they get hit like with a brick. And the first year, even 2 years, some of them, they hate it because it's hard. And they make no bones about it being hard. Kerry Combs has bragged about that. You know, of course it's hard. We're proud of that. Well, when the grass looks greener, and it certainly does when you're doing 5 a.m. workout stuff. You figure, well, who needs this? Especially if you're not starting or playing or can't even see yourself getting on the depth chart. So, you know, Mickey Marotti and you know, and the strength staff and guys like that, they have to be thinking, can our methods, do they have to be altered in any way so that we don't drive off players who just think it's just too hard and I don't want to, I can go somewhere where it'd be easier. I don't have the answer to that. I mean, I've not talked to Mickey about that specifically. But I have to think that, like you said, Rob, the transfer portal absolutely changes things because the players now have some leverage. They're not, I know some of those guys like the 2014 team. You think Cardale Jones would have stuck around? You think there's any chance that Cardale Jones would have been there when they needed him in 2014 under the current rules? Not a chance.
Well, that brings up another point of, you know, coaches lying to players. I mean, how honest are you going to be? Because, yeah, you. I mean, we don't know. It was Cardale Jones that told you'll be the starter. Or I mean, you know how these guys can – coaches can parse it exactly so that they're not lying. They take it right up to the edge, and it's like – Cardale Jones may have heard that he's going to be the starter, but that's not exactly what was promised. So, I mean, I still think that big programs, I know we're tangenting here, big programs like Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, they're still going to come out the winners with this transfer rules. The wealthy are only going to get wealthier in a sense. Because if you're at a small school, you have one huge year, you're at Southwest Missouri State, which I don't even know if they have football, and you suddenly have a great season, you're transferring to the big time then. Why wouldn't you? And that's just going to hurt those programs. The rich will get richer, I think. Now, maybe not everyone will be as rich across the board, even the big programs, but the rich, current rich, will only get richer relatively. Speaking.
I do think with some of these, the relaxing of the transfer rules, the one-time transfer exception, it's going to impact quarterback differently than other positions on the roster. I don't think you're going to have some redshirt freshman offensive lineman who's not starting in his second year at Ohio State be fed up and transfers quickly. There are certain positions on the roster which are inherently more developmental than quarterback. I think there are too many cases of quarterbacks coming in being ready to play and being wanting to play as a freshman or sophomore, and you need to be the starter. So I think that position itself is going to see more movement than maybe other positions on the roster where only one guy really is the starter. You're not going to have guys in the rotation, and the understanding of a lot of other positions are you're going to have to wait a couple of years before you really come in and break out. I guess speaking of other spots on the roster, we should probably get into that because arguably it was a defensive end who had the star performance of the spring game and Jack Sawyer, local product from Pickerington North, 5-star, number 4 overall player in the class. Larry Johnson had said earlier this month that he was performing well in spring practice and was going to find him a role next season, and I think a lot of people who hadn't really watched him up close got an idea why on Saturday they are going to find him a role, even though they have considerable depth at defensive end.
Yeah, he looked great. Now, he wasn't going against Thayer Munford or Nicholas Petit-Frere. Petit-Frere didn't even play in the game. But it's hard to notice defensive guys in spring games. You can't tackle. You know, can't sack a quarterback. You noticed him. I mean, you just kind of, who's that guy? You know, and that bodes very well. I mean, you can just tell if you can flash the way he did in a spring game, that's pretty impressive. Now he'll have his growing pains like all of them do, but I'd be surprised if he is not a guy in the rotation this year.
The thing that was so impressive to me about him, and sure, he wasn't going up against Thayer Munford and he didn't actually have to bring the guy to the ground. But when you watch Jack Sawyer in his stance at the line of scrimmage, the way he gets up and off that stance, he is really quick. And that's some stuff I don't think you can teach. That's some natural ability that I think is going to translate pretty immediately when you just sort of watch him get off and into the backfield. And it is a quick burst, and that's going to – They really do have depth there because you have Zach Harrison, Tyreek Smith, and both of those guys have been talked up by the coaching staff this offseason. You have Tyler Friday, who's been in the rotation as well, and Javonte Jean-Baptiste. So the fact that they want to put him up there, I think, ahead of those guys or with those guys speaks volumes.
You know, if you can just freeze frame Ohio State right at the moment, think about this. What are the most important positions? Quarterback. Bill already said it. Ryan Day has got, like, it's pipeline time. You've got the best guys coming to Ohio State, or among the best. Then you've got Larry Johnson, defensive line coach, and you've got Chase Young. You've got the Bosas. And now, you know, you've got this kid you're talking about, Sawyer. And they are stockpiling NFL talent at the most important positions. Now, last year was a little bit of a hiccup at lockdown corner, but they've been good at lockdown corner. So if you can have, like, the best of the best at corner, defensive end, and quarterback, you're going to win a lot of games.
Yeah, and the other positions that really stood out to me on Saturday, I mean, how about the wide receivers? I mean, geez. I mean, you know, you have Olave and Garrett Wilson, and each of them made great plays, and, you know, they're not going to play a ton in that game. Jackson Smith and Jigba look good. He's going to play in the slot with Garrett Wilson moving outside, and those are going to be your three receivers. But behind them, Marvin Harrison Jr. looked great. Igbuka looked terrific. He had 7 catches for 140 some yards or something like that. Jameson Williams, you know, had flashes last year, not as consistent as they would have liked, but certainly has talent. Julian Fleming didn't play in the game. He's dealing with a shoulder issue. He was the number one overall receiver in the recruiting rankings last year. I mean, it's not going to be a situation where it's Wilson and Olave are going to dominate the reception the way they did last year. And they still will because they're that good. But if they need a breather, they're going to have plenty of talented guys. And you could use a Washington or a Harrison, who's a tall, 6'4". You can use him in the red zone and throw the fade pass and go get it. You know, all that stuff. And the offensive line should be very good. Running backs are deep. You can't tell anything really from a spring game with no tackling. But they've got, you know, usually you like to have a pair and a spare. You've got probably 2 pair and 2 spare there. So the quarter, they're going to make the quarterback's job fairly easy.
The guy who I felt really bad for in the spring game was Demario McCall, who is moving from running back to cornerback and somehow got drew the straw to match up against Chris Olave on one of the early drives in the game. And C.J. Stroud threw it up to Chris Olave. But what a fun assignment to get in your transition to the defensive side of the ball. Go defend Chris Olave. That didn't really go all too well for DeMario. The thing that was probably, I think, most revealing is Garrett Wilson talked a little bit last week about his move to outside receiver at the X spot, which clears up room for Jackson Smith and the Jigba to start in the slot. And he looked – pretty good, and I think that it really explains why they're moving Garrett Wilson back outside, because he had a nice catch late in the first half where he was had pretty tight coverage with Cameron Martinez on him, and it was could have been a little bit of a 50-50 ball and grabbed it on the pass from McCord. But he was somebody I think flashed as well, and really we could talk about the early enrollee freshmen, but I think the spring has probably been just as big for some of the freshmen who enrolled early last year who didn't get a full spring practice. They had 3 weeks or 3 practices in the first week of March. Then the whole thing was shut down. And then the season was so truncated in the fall that for a lot of these guys, like Smith and the Jigba, this is their really first full legitimate offseason. And I think he's primed for a pretty big role next year in the slot.
You know, there's so much talent, I feel, for a guy like Fleming, because there's this thing called inertia, right? And once you kind of have your position and you're solidified, the guy behind you doesn't have to just play as well as you. He's got to play a lot better than you through practice and games. And from what I can see of the talent that's there with Harrison and Bukwa, it's just how does Fleming break through once you are out? I mean, it's kind of like being Wally Pipped. So I kind of feel like for anybody that gets hurt that hasn't been a starter, good luck. And maybe that's the way it always is, but it seems like with this talent pool, it's even more than ever. And in fact, you know, coming full circle back to the transfer portal, that may be a position that guys like say, you know what, I got to get out of here because there's just too much there.
Well, Fleming is young enough where he's going to have some time to grow into a role. It may not be this year, but they're going to lose Chris Olave after this year. He's for sure gone. You think Garrett Wilson is also likely gone. So there'll be some more opportunities, I think, for reps to open up in future seasons just because he may not play a ton as a sophomore. His role could grow as a junior or senior. I don't want to – quickly before we wrap things up, I don't want to, I guess, lavish praise entirely about the depth of this team because there are, I think, a couple spots which may be of concern, particularly in the linebacker group. They only had five healthy scholarship players during the spring game, which is why the backup long snapper, Rowan McCullough, ended up playing linebacker. And they did not have a ton of depth there, and they'll get some guys back like Dallas Gant, but that may be an area they need to address in the portal, bring somebody in, or they're going to run a lot of 4-2-5, which is what they did in the spring game where Craig Young was essentially a third linebacker in the bullet position, which is that linebacker safety spot, which we've heard about ad nauseum, and Ronnie Hickman played some of that as well. So they're either going to need to find some depth at linebacker or get used to playing five defensive backs in the field.
But we saw against Alabama, you know, the scheme situation there. I mean, Bill's talked about it, but, you know, what's the lasting image of that Alabama game is the linebackers like
Duff Gorland on Devontae Smith.
Duff Gorland running in cement, quicksand to try to cover, and maybe they're just saying, hey, we just can't have any more of that. We're going to go five in the back and use that bullet and live and die with that.
Well, they also didn't have their cornerbacks for the spring game. The Seven Banks and Cam Brown are still rehabbing from injury, so – you know, they're the only in the back seven. I think the only guy we can say is pretty solid in terms of he's going to be that guy is Josh Proctor at safety. Other than that, you know, I think Marcus Williamson at slot corner. I would think Taraja Mitchell would be one of the linebackers, but you know, I wouldn't put that in stone. The back seven is going to be a major focus. You feel good about the defensive line, and the defensive line is going to have to be really good to put pressure on the quarterback. The best pass defense is a pass rush, and it's going to have to be that way for Ohio State this year because, you know, at least as of now, assuming Seven Banks and Cam Brown are healthy and they make the kind of progress that they hope that they make, then they could be okay. But not having them for spring and presumably some of summer, that's going to set their progress back. We'll see. But when you talk about where the question marks on this team, well, number one's quarterback. But that's more of just who's the fill in the blank guy, as opposed to a real, is there competence there? The back seven though, it's a real issue.
I do think there were some encouraging signs in the back end, and they don't have a lot of options there, but some of the options they do have, especially with Cameron Brown and Seven Banks being hurt, is Ryan Watts, who had the first interception of Jack Miller on that first drive. I don't think it was a great throw by Miller, and he probably shouldn't have even attempted it in the first place. Garrett Wilson was running out of room, and he tried to force in a fade ball. But you did get to see a little bit of Ryan Watts' length in making that interception. He's 6'3", which is the prototype corner that Kerry Combs wants. That lot of length, you can play press to man on the outside and really jam receivers and be physical. That's what he wants. And I thought Ryan Watts seemed like he looked the part for the most part and didn't have too many issues, made a play. But if there's a setback with Cam Brown or Seven Banks, maybe he's able to step in, or maybe he's able to just rotate a bit. He's another one of those second year guys who really missed out on a development opportunity last offseason. I thought showed himself well in the spring game, but that is the area of concern moving forward. As much as you like their depth at offensive line and defensive line, and they could have two of the best units in the country there, the back end of the defense really, I think, is something to watch.
Yeah, but I thought guys like Lathan Ransom, you've noticed him when he's been in games and at the end of last year and even in the spring game, I noticed him. Legend Cavazos is a guy to keep an eye on. I mean, they've got talented guys. It's just a matter of, you know, which guys do you plug in and are they quite ready yet?
You don't want to ever become, we've written this in the past, the minute Ohio State becomes a Big 12 team where the offense is just clicking and doing its thing and the defense is, that's problematic. I don't think they're that. I don't think they're there yet. And maybe we'll never get there. But is, you know, Coach Wilson has said that you can't focus on both sides of the ball exclusive. I mean, one side of the ball is always going to be a little weaker. And I think Ohio State fans are probably worried. If I was an Ohio State fan, I'd be like, is this going to be 2 years ago where the linebackers, or 3 years ago, wherever it was, where the linebackers were a little shaky and it was just a lot of quick throws over the middle and crossing patterns?
We will find out, I guess, in a few months. I hope you everybody enjoyed the spring game. Thank you for listening into this edition of the Buckeye Action Football Podcast, and we will talk to you soon. Thanks for listening, everybody.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is made possible by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
Be sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra Podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.